Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us this evening. Tonight, we are going to have a great guest, and we are going to talk about the power of silence, finding out about your inner self, what is love, what is peace, what is silence, what is the church, what is all of this going on? We have a great guest with us this evening. His name is Bruce Davis, and he is the author of The Love Letters, St. Francis and St. Clair of Assisi, Meet Pope Francis. And let me tell you, I really loved this book. It is a lot of letters that they write, each saint writes to each other, and they talk about these topics where these days I find so many people would love to know the answers to. When I'm sitting in silence, what does that mean? How do I do it? What does love mean? Oh, you mean that thing on TV? Silence? You mean I have to set down my cell phone? Or, you know, before the show I was even speaking to Bruce. People are exercising and they've got their earphones on. One earphone is for their telephone when it rings and the other earphone is music playing in their brain. People can't even slow down to even know what their life is worth. We were thinking about doing a great walk in New Orleans. And we said, let's do exercise. But then we said, you know what? There's more disconnect, people doing exercise these days, because they're just walking and looking forward. They're not even connecting to the people around them. They're looking for still something to better themselves. I'm going to be better. I'm going to be the top. I'm going to be the mark. So we're going to do a movement exercise. Doesn't that sound great? Where everybody can just stand there and move with the music. And they can look at each other and smile and, oh, wait, don't dare let those endorphins, you know, raise up those good, you know, hormones. When you look at someone else and you smile, or you're just next to someone else, or you interact, or you're able to be free and just let yourself just be, that's what we're talking about. How can you find your inner self? Wow, you know, a lot of people are really looking for that, but I don't even know if they'll ever find it. Pretty soon we're coming up on the 70th anniversary of D-Day. And you know, a long time ago, people used to write love letters. If you've ever asked your grandparents or some elders, they would say, oh yeah, I have this little pile of letters tied up in a bow in a little box. And you know, maybe from the early 1900s, there's a lot of letters around. These days, you get something on a text, and you barely even glance at it and it's gone, or it's on Facebook and it's in no man's land. So what does really, how could you ask these questions? Or how can you even communicate with another person? You really can't. But in a letter form, you can actually give of yourself. You can say, you know, really, I'm feeling this way. And how do you feel this way? And what do you really think about this? Wouldn't that be so exciting to actually have a letter? Well, that's what Bruce has in his books. These are love letters from St. Francis and St. Clair, and it is a very interesting read. So, Bruce, welcome to the show. So it's a pleasure to have you with us today.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to having our time together.
Thank you. And, you know, don't you believe that the world is just too fast sometimes? And, you know, even writing letters, you know, I just said about D-Day, you know, I'm sure elders have a lot of letters and we don't even do that anymore. We can't even find that in ourselves. If you ask a child to sit down and write, or a teen to sit down and write two sentences, they're like, you mean with a pen and paper, right?
I don't even know if they're taught anymore to write letters.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have young kids, but I don't know in the school system if they're taught to write on young letters or if they take them right to the computers anymore. I mean, the world has changed so much.
Yeah, and it seems to be a disconnect, I think, in the world. You know, in the early 1900s, people tried to connect with each other. Granted, they weren't always taught, you know, what is love. I mean, goodness gracious, after the war, they just took what they could get, and that's how they interacted. But I think now we've kind of grown as individuals, and we're saying, I want something deeper. I want to know more about myself or someone else or love for other human beings. We're not all just running on this, you know, crazy treadmill. Of course, there's a lot of us that still are, right?
Well, I think the big difference was when you and I were kids, that we had time to ourselves. Now, we didn't have a telephone always attached to us. You had to look for a payphone. I mean, we weren't always in contact with our parents or with other people. We were on our own, and there's a sense of solitude and independence and wholeness from that. And now with always being attached to a telephone and texting and everything, people can lose that sense of solitude and lose that sense of interior being. You know, just taking a long walk, and you can't call anybody. You're on a walk, or even if you take a drive. You don't have a telephone. You're on a drive. You know, and I think we've lost something that was very beautiful. And of course, people can turn off their telephone, but do they turn it off? And do they not listen for the next text and just have this time of solitude and simple peace?
You know, and I think the topics that you cover in your book, the love letters, are very timely. I don't think they ever go out of style. They're not fads. It's just a transition of where we are along the line of learning more about us, ourselves as individuals and as, you know, spiritual beings. And it does take a while, I think, in generations for people to start to hone in and say, you know, I'd be interested in knowing a little bit more about myself, don't you think?
Yeah, the love letters is really about the heart inside each of us, our vulnerability. Sometimes we feel empty. Sometimes that emptiness is just peacefulness, and we feel connected to all of nature. Sometimes we feel a little desperate. You know, the love letters are about all the feelings that come up when we're in love, and it's not just being in love with somebody else. It's being in love with life. Being in love with God, being in, to be alive is to be in love, to be connected to your heart. So it was fun writing the book from St. Francis to St. Clair, writing all these letters about all the experiences of love and just the depths in our heart if we're willing to open up and feel them. And I wanted to write these letters just to give a big push to love and also love in the church with the new Pope Francis, wondering if he would be like the original St. Francis. Is he really your brother, or is this Pope, no, just another Pope, politics and the same old story of telling other people what to do? And I was hoping that this book would be an embrace for everybody, for us to have more heart in the church and less telling others what to do and I'm right and you're wrong and all these just the old kind of church. I think everybody's ready for a new church, which is a new heart and more life in the church.
I think they're looking for more interaction and more compassion for where we are in these days. I mean, I grew up as a Roman Catholic in the 50s and 60s. I can remember fourth grade all the way through to 12th grade. I used to sit at the big organ and with my back turned to the priest and his back turned to the congregation, and we would do the Mass in Latin, he and I, singing back and forth. You know, there was always a mystique about the church, you know. There was this like this, you come in and you sit down and you actually were praying in things. Now you can go to the church and you're really, I went with a group of people one day, and for the entire first half of the Mass, they were checking out everybody else that was in the church, who was there, who wasn't there. They looked everywhere around in the church at everybody and everything instead of walking in and focusing on why they were there in the first place. You know, if you go into somebody's house, you don't go around in all the rooms and check out the bathrooms and their kitchen cupboards, you know, what's under their couch and what's on their patio before saying hello to them. You focus on them. And, you know, people can't even focus anymore when they go into the church on the purpose of being there. I think we've become so distant from the church.
You know, what's happened is that people are not told how to receive the church. You know, they don't talk about that. This is your time to have peace and quiet, to turn off your cell phone, turn off all the work you have to do and phone calls you have to make next week, and just practice being very present with the presence of God in the sanctuary, and just to experience this deeply inside your heart. So most priests don't talk that way, and the people are not taught how to experience all the gifts of the church. So a lot of people just leave because it's boring, and they don't like being told what to do and what's a sin and what's not a sin. And so for a lot of people, they're not really touched deeply. And then some people, they join a church where they're told exactly what to do, and they believe this, and our group is right, and everybody else's group is wrong. And so that's sort of like being on the winning team and convincing everybody,
right,
you should be on my team. But that's not really what religion's about. It's not our team is the best, and all the other teams are not so good. There's only one team, and it's the human race. And no matter what the church is, it should be about going deep in our hearts and listening to the small voice of God inside of us. But most people don't know how to do that.
You know, we have a very Catholic city. New Orleans is very Catholic. Well, it is to all religions, but let's say it's a very religious city. But after Hurricane Katrina, you know, so many of the churches have closed down, probably more than 50%. And it's incredible to see, what's left. And these churches are just left there in disarray, you know, and being vandalized and everything else. And even the ones that are open are being vandalized. There's no respect, and you wonder, how can we get that respect back? How can we honor something in our life? I mean, there's got to be something that's important in our life. There's got to be something that's of value that we would respect and be able to hold, you know, as honorable. I mean, we just can't go around pillaging all the way through our life, you know. Oh, that doesn't work for me, let's go to the next thing, you know. Or, oh, you know, that husband doesn't work for me, I'm going to try another one. Or, you know, my kids don't like this school. Well, hey, you know, I'm going to start trouble so they can get out. You know, we're always like pillaging through life, we're, you know, seeing what we can get out of it, and then we're on to the next thing. So how can we really, you know, begin to maybe honor these things in our life? Because to say about love, you really have to have respect or honor for something, and it's really got to be yourself, right?
Well, I think what happened with the hurricane, but it's a problem in the country in general, but especially with the hurricane, it's a loss of community. You know, the community was really broken down, and historically, the church is where community comes together. And so it's really up to the priests and a few good-hearted people, you know, to call the community back, that we sit together, that we support each other, we have meals together. And this day and age, with all the single parents and, you know, broken families, community is even more important than ever. And so the church is really a place to bring back community. And it just takes a few people to start inviting the neighbors over on Wednesday night. Let us sit in silence for a while and just enjoy the peace of our church and the peace and quiet of the sanctuary, and then let's have tea together. And it's not so complicated. And people need community. And I believe people really need community in silence. You know, they just, because they're so busy and there's so much media and so much, you know, fear in the world, that it's very beautiful to come back to the sanctuary and just sit for a few minutes in the peace and in the holiness of the sanctuary. And that's where community is. And then afterwards, share tea and cookies. It just starts, that's as simple as that, can start one evening a week, and then the churches can rebuild again. But it's really sad, and I agree with you, it's a loss of community, and community is really the foundation. You know, we all need community.
Well, how would you, if you were, how would you define a community? Because some people say, it could be a political one, it could be a financial community. What is really the basic core of a community? A lot of people don't know what that basic core of a community is.
Yeah, well, if it's in the church, it's around the church. But I tell people they want to meet people or they want to spend quality time with people. I've been doing this for years. In fact, my wife and I did it for years, a long time ago. We opened our house every Thursday night at 7 o'clock to whoever wanted to come and sit together in silence for a half hour, and then we'd have tea and cookies. And people heard about it and said, wow, that sounds nice, just to get out of the rat race and come sit in peace and quiet with some good people for a half hour of real quiet, and then just to visit for a few minutes with tea and cookies. And I suggested this to people all around the world, because we lived for many years in Europe, different parts of Europe. In the last 12 years, we lived in Assisi, Italy. And so people want to know, I want to have this feeling in my life. How do I do it? I say, well, open your house every Thursday night, 7 o'clock, and you'll be surprised. People will come. And we did it for years in California, and there was not a Thursday night that somebody did not come. And sometimes it was 3 people, 10 people, 5, 11. It was different all the time. But somebody always came. And it was nice just making that space to have community and to be together in quiet and then have tea and cookies afterwards. Because it fulfills something deep inside of us. And it's not about money. It's not about politics. It's not about selling ourselves. It's not about networking. It's nice just to come together as human beings and sit together and then have tea and cookies. Or you don't even need to serve anything. You can just sit together and then afterwards share for a few minutes what's going on in your life. And just really simple community serves people. And as a psychologist, I feel that's really important. Particularly with all the conflict going on in families and
right.
relationships, community is a safe place.
Right, because you do say in one of your letters in the book, it says that, you know, that the church confuses people saying that you're great because you have suffered greatly. I mean, so many times, if you could tell us your views on that. I know I saw a billboard the other day, and it had someone's picture on it and said, he's now a hero. And I said, what makes him any different than the other people? You know, and define what is a hero. And the people really couldn't. They just, you know, couldn't do it. So, what, you know, I think I'm a type person who I find that everybody is, you see each other in each other, so there's really no labels. And then when those labels start to go on there, that kind of maybe changes the paradigm for people?
Right, and also I think there's a big misunderstanding. People think that if you suffer that, then you can become holy or something, that there's something
right.
special about suffering or self-sacrifice. And it's really not true. I mean, for many years we worked with homeless people, and these people are not holy. They have a very difficult, challenging life, and they have moments of finding joy, and most of the time it's just everyday needs is a struggle, just to be in the weather and everything else. And there's a big misunderstanding about that. What really is that when you find wholeness in your own heart, when you feel your own peacefulness, then you don't need so many possessions, and you can live more simply. So most people think, well, I got to give everything away, then I'm going to feel better. And it's really the
right.
other way around. Find your heart, find your own deep peace inside, and then you find that you start giving things away because I don't need so many possessions. I don't need to be busy and make all this money. I can live on less and be happy. You know, the changes begin inside and not outside. But there's a big misunderstanding about that. People think I need to leave my job or I have to sacrifice or if I have a lot of pain, that's going to help me. It's not true. It's the other way around. You find wholeness first in your heart, and then you begin finding more simplicity, and you can live, you know, with less outwardly because you have found so much inside. So, and the church, unfortunately, has promoted the old way of thinking, but it's from the medieval ages. It's not modern thinking.
Well, you know, also, too, a lot of people will come to me and they will say, you know, I understand that I have this disease, you know, and I'll have to suffer till the day I die because, you know, that is the path that God put me on. And it's, and, you know, you have to allow them to be where they are, but also, is that really the truth?
You know, unfortunately, people live in so much drama, and they say, that's not what we're here for. We're here for joy. Life is a gift. And it goes very quickly. Like, I still think I'm in my 20s, but we have kids
yeah.
in their 30s. So I am not in my 20s. And I meet people all the time in relationships. They're fighting all the time in their relationship. And they think, well, I guess that's the purpose of our relationship. We just keep fighting and healing and fighting and think we're, like, learning more about ourselves. And I say, no, that is not the purpose of relationship. The purpose of relationship is to enjoy and receive each other and to be support each other and to be good friends. You know, that's why we come together, is to support each other in this world. There's enough struggle. Why do you want to be married to more struggle or in a relationship
right.
that's more struggle? That's not what it's all about. And a lot of people, they just live in drama all the time, and they think that's normal. I say living in peace and living with joy all the time, that's normal. And in other cultures, they live that way much more. It's really a modern phenomena that people live with so much drama. And it's not necessary. And it's not good for us. It's violent to the soul. You know, when lovers break up, and even when friends break up, it's painful to the soul. You know, we
mm-hmm.
feel it deeply, and we get busy, we meet new friends, and life goes on. But in a very deep, special way, every friendship is special. Every relationship is special. And we need to receive and enjoy all of our friends because every friendship is unique. Now, each person touches us differently. And to lose a friendship, to lose a relationship, it's not just, oh, it's no big deal, I'll go on, life is, no, it's not a big problem. It is a problem to the soul. Relationships are sacred, and we've lost that sense of how important we are to one another and how special we are.
And also, too, I think the idea of support is a big deal right now because a lot of people say, well, you know, I'm going to help them for a while, but I don't want to enable them, or I'm going to help them for a while, but, you know, they can do it on their own. Let them go to figure it out, or I don't want them to take anything from me. And they don't even realize what the word support may mean or even how to be supportive. How would you define that?
Right, I mean, everybody wants to have their own house. You know, this is a totally new phenomenon. Now, there's so few relationships working these days. People don't really receive each other and enjoy each other.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody wants to have their own house, their own car, their own job, you know, their own refrigerator. No, everybody has to have their own, you know, space. And what that really is about is that we haven't found the space inside of ourselves. So if we have our own apartment, our own house, you know, we're independent and we're free. But we're not really independent and free. We're lonely and we're separate from each other. And to heal that loneliness and that separateness, that's something we heal within our own hearts. You know, we go inside our own hearts and underneath our fear and all of our thoughts is a big space of peace inside each of us. And if we meditate or to spend time in nature or go to the park or go to the beach and feel this big space inside our hearts, then we realize that relationships are beautiful, family is beautiful, friends, community, they're all important. And this need to have my own space, it's really a projection of wanting to find this space inside of us. And when we find this space inside our own hearts, we find peace. And we don't all need to be so independent with our own car, apartment, and everything else.
You know, when people go to get a new house or they go to move to a new city, they walk in and they say, oh, how does the energy feel to you? Oh, this energy feels good. I think I could live here. I think this energy in the city feels, you know, right about the energy for me. But they don't even realize what they're saying is that their body has an energy and it's resonating. But, you know, so many people don't even believe that their body has energy to resonate the good. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, you could stay at home and you're sort of like zoning at a certain energy. But then you go out with a bunch of people and you're like, oh, this feels good. You know, your heart starts to open more. You start to, your face gets a little pink. You start to feel a little warm. You start to have all of these feelings that your energy feels good in the presence of those other people. Yet people want to shut themselves off from that, you know, and that's really a modern day thing.
Yeah, and exactly. I mean, we all want to listen to our hearts and do what feels good to our hearts. I mean, we're making decisions all the time. Like tonight, people can go to a smoky bar that's real noisy and the food is terrible, or you can go for a walk in the park, or you can call a friend and go out for coffee. I mean, we're making decisions all the time, and we're listening to what nurtures us, what serves us. But if we really pay more attention to the choices we make, we can have a lot more joy and not just do things out of habit. So when you say pay attention to our own energy, I would call it paying attention to our own heart, pay attention to our joy, pay attention to our intentions and the choices we're making. And then we create a better life. And that's why we started offering these silent retreats to get people away from, you know, there's so much media and so much noise, most people don't even feel themselves anymore. They don't feel their own thoughts. They don't know what is my thoughts and what's in the news because there's so much news and most of it's not good. So we started offering retreats that people can really get out of all the noise and spend a few days in beautiful nature and feel themselves deeply. What's in my heart? What is my truth? And to listen deeply to themselves. And then you carry that back into the world and life is very different. You really make choices that that nourish you and not just choices, well, there's nothing else happening, I might as well do this. You begin to be realizing that life is short and I want to enjoy it. And so you begin choosing the choices that are really serving us and serving others.
I think you really, sometimes some people need to stop, as you said, and be able to feel what is a feeling of good means. And just like I said, we know when you feel energy when you go into a house or a city, when you are with nature and quiet, you can get the energy of the nature to actually nurture yourself. You know, that's a sense of community, you and nature there. So then you could say, okay, I feel good, I'm okay. A lot of people don't even know that they are okay, and they're running and running and running. Just because it's almost like chasing, you know, a tail off a rabbit, you know, they just keep going until one day when they, you know, they'll be calling me up, hey, I hit the wall, you know, you got to save me. And it's like, I don't think so, you know, because you can't, you know, how far have you come over that cliff? And, you know, it's time, you know, I think a lot of people to step back. And that's what you say is, you know, about being quiet, about sitting still. Not having all these distractions, being able to resonate with nature, be able to function just with yourself for a moment to see where you're actually at along that paradigm.
Yeah, people make life very complicated, and it's not that complicated.
Yeah.
in 1975, I wrote a book that was the first book on the inner child. It was called The Magical Child Within You. And I was in graduate school, and I was looking at all these adults and therapists and doctors, and they seemed as uptight and nervous and stressed out as their patients, just a little bit different. And I was wondering, my God, what's going on here? All these adults, they're not happy, and why do they think they're going to help other people be happy when they're not happy themselves? So I wrote this book called The Magical Child Within You, and it's about listening and remembering our inner child. You know, what did we enjoy doing? Well, I enjoyed going to the park. I enjoyed going out for coffee with my friends. I enjoyed going to the ocean. You know, our inner child is not so far away. And so when we listen to our inner child, when we listen to our heart, when we begin listening to the deep silence and peace inside of us, we find something that's more substantial. We find our core self, or what I call our ground of being. But people, their life is so complicated. They got so much to do, and everything is piling up. And that's the problem, that they're complicated because they're separate from their hearts. And when we live more from our heart and in our heart, then we begin choosing a less complicated life. There's no reason for life to be complicated. We don't take any of it with us. You know, the only thing that goes with us is our heart. And in the modern world, it's incredible how complicated people's lives can be. We have so much, but if we have all these possessions, what good does it do if we're just worried all the time and running on the treadmill trying to get everything done? And it doesn't have to be complicated, and our life doesn't have to be drama. Our story is not so important. We're much more than our personal story. People get so caught up, they want to feel important, you know. They want to be a success.
Yeah.
I mean, all these things are so important. Well, if you're a success one day, you know, a week later, nobody's really going to care. And so you have to care about yourself and care about your own heart, because success, I think, lasts about 15 minutes.
You know, there have been times in the past where people would even actually say, I'm sure that you've heard this in the 70s and 80s, it's a dog-eat-dog world, you know. You got to get out there and get them before they get you. And a lot of people have heard that growing up, and that is something that they would bring forth in their raising of their children too. So I think it's taking a while for people to understand that that's not really, they didn't tell you the truth. You know, that's not really what it is all about, don't you believe?
Exactly, and that's why the new Pope is so exciting for Catholics, and the Dalai Lama is so exciting for Buddhists, and there's new teachers out there saying, you know, the new Pope picks up kids and puts them on his Popemobile, and he's not so impressed with having a fancy place and all these fancy things. He says we should have an open mind, we should look in our heart, we should enjoy the grace that is with us. You know, he's talking about a different tone. And that's what's important, that more teachers come forward and they speak with a new tone of life. Now, where the battle is over, judging each other is really not such a great thing to do. Why don't we find out what's good about one another and see what we have in common? You know, it's a whole other tone. And we live in very exciting times when we have leaders who are speaking in those terms and not just the old terms that you're wrong and I'm right and you should conform to our rules. And I think the old school is over, and we're ready for a new school. And hopefully the new Pope and people like the Dalai Lama and other great teachers are going to come forward with this new school, which is life is beautiful, and it's not, we're not here for conflict and fighting each other.
You know, now I know I have an idea of your age, and you have it of mine. That always sounds like the hippies people would say, right?
Do you know who the first hippie was? Was St. Francis of Assisi. In the 1200s, his parents were pressuring him to go into the family business and to go in the Crusades, and he dropped out. And he lived outside the city walls, and he went up on the hill and lived in nature. And he was the first hippie in the 12th century. So there's always been hippies. And what that is people standing up for their own hearts and finding that there's much more to life than just buying into the old struggle.
Yeah, that old struggle will take you down to your knees pretty quickly. You know, it will eat up your heart, as they say. And then we wonder why heart disease is so high these days, you know. Heart disease and diabetes, well, you're trying to feed yourself, you know, sweet of something to be able to fill your heart to feel good about yourself and, you know, to get that sense in your body that, hey, I'm okay, I'm good, I feel good. And they just, you know, that's a real difficult thing to be able to run to or away from. And a lot of people can't see that.
Yeah, well, I blame the school system, and I blame the churches. You know, it's more important to learn algebra than it is to learn patience or to learn about compassion. You know, it's more important to learn, you know, all these scientific facts and history than it is to learn about solitude and surrender and tenderness and forgiveness and, you know, courage and, you know, all and gratitude, all these things, and self-acceptance. There's so many qualities of the heart that give us a rich heart. And so no wonder we have heart disease. Our hearts are broken because we are broken. We're separated. We're living these strong, intensely mental lives. Everything is in the computer. Everything is intellectual. We're busy doing. And there's nothing in our educational system or in most churches about learning how to be and just enjoy and to receive. Most people, even though we have everything, we don't really receive the abundance we have. I mean, we were talking about this before the air. Anybody who's lived outside of America and you come back and you walk into a grocery store here, there's not a grocery store anywhere else in the world that's as abundant as the normal grocery store in America. I mean, we have food from every culture. I mean, it's incredible. But we just take it for granted. And we have so much that we take for granted. And if we received it, then we wouldn't be so broken in our hearts, and we wouldn't be depressed. People are very depressed, and people are taking drugs for depression instead of learning how to appreciate the qualities of the heart. The drugs are just a mask. They don't heal us. They don't do us any good. They just maybe make our minds feel a little more stimulated. It's like caffeine, but that's not really the answer.
Well, what would you say to people that I've had this discussion with several people over the past weekend. They were, well, I have pain. I have to have a drug for it. I don't want to be in pain. And they can't define their pain, but they feel they're in it all the time.
Yeah, and so I'm not judging people. Some people need some prescription medicine or some pain, some medicine for their pain. But what I'm saying is that the real pain is a pain of emptiness and loneliness and brokenness inside our hearts. And that pain is healed through community. It's healed through listening to our inner child, you know, going out for an ice cream cone. That sounds foolish, but if it's chocolate ice cream, I'll be there. Or I especially like Rocky Road. It's going out and calling up a friend you haven't talked with in 6 months, say, you know, I miss you. And then having a nice evening with a friend can do a lot more than a whole bunch of aspirin or whatever drugs we're taking. You know, it's learning how to nourish ourselves and nurture ourselves deeply. And we feel that it's very important for people to get out of the noise of the cities and come into silence. And that's why we started offering these silent retreats in California. Also, we continue them in Italy. That you need to take retreat from daily life and nourish yourselves with good food, nature, good people, and by being and receiving our own hearts. Now, there's an abundance in our own hearts. And with the busy mind, we don't feel it. Well, no, I don't feel anything. I'm just thinking, and my mind is always busy. But when you slow down and breathe and feel in your own heart, there's a deep gentleness to receive. And people can change in a couple days just by receiving the deep gentleness in their own hearts. And that originally was the purpose of church. People would come into church, they would take communion, they would sit with communion and feel the presence of God deep inside their hearts and around them. And it was very holy, it was special. And for most people, we've lost that. And as you say, many of the churches have been closed. People don't get it. There's nothing there for them anymore. But it's up to us to bring the original church back. And the original church is a church of the heart. You know, St. Francis was a church of the heart. He wrote this prayer, "Lord, make me an instrument." Now imagine if we all were doing that prayer, and if the Pope Francis brought this prayer back, "Lord, make me an instrument." That's very different than, "Lord, what can the world can do for me today?" You know, it's a whole different paradigm. It's a whole different attitude towards life. I want to be an instrument of peace with my home. I want to be an instrument of joy at work. I want to be an instrument of love and fun in my community. You know, it's a whole other way of living. And so we're at a crossroads now. It's either the old way of thinking or the new way of thinking. And I think Pope Francis, the Dalai Lama, and many spiritual teachers are talking about this new way of thinking, and they're living it. They're showing us how to do it. So it's very special.
And in your book, St. Francis had written, "All we can do is keep our hearts in the light." Now, I will tell you, if I sat down and asked 100 people what that meant, I probably would get less than 1%. Can you explain that to us?
Well, we do it every day. You know, we make choices, like I said a while ago, like this evening. Are we going to go to a bar that's really noisy and smoky, filled with people who are drinking? I would not call that the light. Are we going to go out to dinner with an old friend and have Chinese food? I would call that some more light. Are we going to take a walk with our kids in the park? I would call that even more light. So every day we are making choices. Is it bringing light in my life or is it bringing darkness in my life? And we're not conscious of the choices we're making. It's nothing complicated. I'm choosing light every day. I'm choosing to spend time with my family, my wife, our guests, and the silence and the nature. You know, everybody, we have these choices. And so we can become more focused and more light. And I don't need this relationship. It's really darkness. This friend and I, we really don't get along, and we keep going out because we have nothing else to do. Well, there's much else to do. We can choose light. And each of us can feel what that means for us. Talking to you on the radio is light for me. I enjoy it.
Thank you. And you know what, though? I think those two people think that life has to always be, as I call, roses and cotton candy. But life does have challenges, and that is something that in your love letters they've also spoken about challenges, where they said to accept the challenges and love the challenges. And because, you know, some people want to go through and they say, "Oh, I hit that again, you know. I'm going to be bigger, stronger, and better next time. I'm never going to let that happen." And they get this hardness to them. Or, they want to navigate their way around these things, and they lose a lot of the joy or the experiences in life. So challenges are a part of life.
Yeah, but most people expect challenges and expect difficulty, and they just say, "Well, that's the way life is." And they don't risk to live their light, or to live their joy.
Right.
You know, and so, like a lot of people, like they don't meditate and they don't really think about these things. "Well, I got too much to do, Dad. It's not important for me." And then when you get older and you really like to have some peaceful heart, you have a lot of aches and pains, and it's not so easy to sit and meditate. And so it's much better to learn in your 20s, 30s, and 40s than 60s, 70s, and 80s. But, you know, we have choices every day, and we don't need to just think that life is difficult. Life can be peaceful. If we are raising kids, we can get up a half hour before the kids do or a half hour after they go to bed, and we can sit in peace and quiet. And 20 minutes sitting in peace and quiet, this is food for the nerves. And most people, they don't have any food for the nerves. They're just living on raw energy. And that's why you say they have diabetes, heart attacks, the computer,
right,
the TV. They're just always this energy, and it doesn't feed us. And so it's important that we feed our nerves every day with peace and quiet, with light, whatever that is for us. And one friend, or, you know, just listening to music that brings us, you know, peace and quiet, whatever it is, we need to nourish ourselves. We take care of our bodies. We go to, I don't know how many years of school I went to. I went to like 20 years of school, and I never learned about taking care of my heart. Even in graduate school,
yeah,
in psychology, nobody talked about forgiveness. You do it for yourself, not for the other. Nobody talked about compassion and gratitude and acceptance and what is a deep friendship and the joy of,
right,
generosity and honesty, humility. Nobody talked about these things, and I went through 4 years of graduate school in psychology. That would have been much more helpful than learning about all these behavioral analysis and family therapy and all these other things we were taught. And it's just tragic that we're not taught tools to nurture and embrace our hearts. And so the last 20, 30 years I've been writing books and taking people on retreats to learn tools for taking care of our heart, because life is short, and if we don't have a good, fun, joyful heart, what do we have at the end of the day? We feel empty and lonely and separate. And that's not necessary.
You know, you have this chapter, or this rather this letter in your book also about healing hands, letter from Claire to Francis. And you talk about the doctors making healing so complicated, but what, you know, but love is really what matters. So we have a few, about 15 minutes left. And, you know, we talk about the healing power and what love does and doesn't do, or what it can do and to awaken to it. You know, I can remember my own experience. Many of the listeners have heard this before, and if you haven't, it's on my website, on mypersonaladvocate2.com. It says my personal story. But in naturopathic school, I was sitting next to a woman who had had a stroke, and she was violently trying to get the words to be able to say to these other 10 doctors in the room what she was feeling. And I was sitting next to her, and it was her and I were the only two women in the room. And, you know, after like a few minutes of this, it was just welling up in me, and I just took my hand and just set it on her shoulder just to, you know, of comfort to know that I was there. Well, you would have thought that I created a cardinal sin. I got pulled out of that room, and it was like, you are so going to be out of here. People have to be in their pain. And you know, I wonder if you could share a little bit what your thoughts are about these, because people really do need to have comfort and heal. You know, healing is your heart can open, it can mend, it can morph, it can do all kinds of things. I mean, it is a glorious thing, you know. And sometimes, like you said, you know, the old ways of doing things, put up that wall, don't touch those people, you know, don't say this, don't say that, is sometimes what's really holding us all back. And what are your thoughts on that healing idea?
Well, I think what you said is very true. And in our culture today, we're afraid to touch, we're afraid to get close.
Yeah.
You know, you're not allowed to hug kids unless they're your kid.
Right.
And, you know, there's this whole paranoia, you know, you know, of being physically close and making contact with each other. And that's what love is. That's what friendships are. We hug. You know, I enjoy living in Europe all these years because they don't have the same paranoia as we do in America. Friends hug and they kiss. And they're close, and they hold hands, and it's normal for two guys to hold hands and two girls to hold hands, and it's not a statement about anything, but you're just old friends, or you walk down the street arm in arm. Like in Italy, you know, we have a passeggiata every evening around sunset. Everybody's walking down the streets arm in arm, men and men, women and women, I mean, everything, kids and old people. It's normal. We're loving each other walking down the old streets. And in America, I've never seen that. I've never seen people walking arm in arm. It's very rare. You know, even families don't walk arm in arm. And we're missing something. You know, it's, again, it's a loss of heart. It's a loss of trusting ourselves and being close. And a lot of physical healing can take place just sitting with each other and listening, holding mm-hmm. each other's hand or touching one another. You know, there's nothing to be afraid of. It's beautiful. And you're right. And it's very beautiful to go into other cultures and realize that there's not this paranoia of being touched. You know, people walk yeah. arm in arm and they hug and they kiss. And you kiss and hug other people's kids. And, you know, it's just normal. We're all part of the human family. We don't need to be so separate and so afraid. And it's really tragic. And it's become more so in America in the last 10, 20 years. It didn't used to be this bad. And now everybody's afraid of a predator or is afraid of something. I don't know what.
Right. Well, you know, I've been in healthcare since the early 70s, and I can tell you, it used to be, you know, people were loosening up a little bit in the 70s, you know, with the hippies. But then along came AIDS, and that really put a shutter to it because I was in the dental profession at that time. And that really put, it was like, you know, this huge thing came over the U.S., and everybody says, don't touch anybody. Don't do anything, you know, just don't touch anybody. You don't know what anybody has. You don't know who anybody is with. Don't touch anybody. And that really propagated a lot of things in healthcare where, you know, we had to have things covered in plastic. We'd have to be disposables from head to toe, blah, 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 the whole thing. And it really got to be a paranoia thing. And, you know, I think that kind of loosened up again, you know, and then, you know, faded away. And then, like you said, in society again, in the late 90s, early 2000s, we start with predators, you know. And then now we start with, you know, gun violence. So it's really that history and society are dictating, you know, exactly. We're allowing them to dictate that and how, our, you know, open or closed our heart is.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I think AIDS created a lot of fear, and then 9/11 mm-hmm. created a lot of fear. And mm-hmm. then the news, you think there's a predator on every block. You know, somebody's yeah. kidnapping kids every 5 minutes. And it's just that the way that's the news is. I don't think it's any more common now than it was 10, 20, 30 years ago. But everybody thinks that my kid is going to be snatched any moment. And the kids living with that energy is terrible. You know, we used to walk home from school. It was no big deal. And, you know, this energy of living in fear and living separate is terrible. And it's going to take all of us to not treat each other that way and to, you know, take walks and trust and love and live. And we have to turn yeah. the culture around.
Well, I think that's going to take a while for some areas because I can honestly tell you, I do have four kids. They are now in their 20s and 30s. But we did have several instances of that where people, predators, were trying to bother my kids. And here in Louisiana, you get postcards in the mail that says, you know, so-and-so is a predator and he lives at so-and-so address and here's his picture. And we do get that pretty much 2-3 a month. We do get it. And, you know, there's so there is a lot going on there. It's just a factor of we have to do the best to share as much as we can and to keep ourselves going. And I think that's the most important thing. Because in some areas of the country, they're a little bit more advanced. You know, they don't have a lot of these problems. Some areas of the country, they've got a whole heck of a lot of problems. I could probably say I'm living in the area. It's got a whole heck of a lot of problems, but nobody wants to talk about them, you know. But that
right.
is
we don't want to,
different.
We don't
you don't
want to
scare people.
Fear.
Right.
You don't want to scare people, and it's mainly the news always going 24 hours a day. And those stories are what people want to hear because it's exciting mm-hmm. and it's dramatic and this is what's happening. And we don't want to live in fear. I mean, how much mm-hmm. fear with all, you know, before we lived in Italy for 12 years and there was no mm-hmm. such thing as alerts. And then we came back mm-hmm. after 9/11 and there's an alert every 5 minutes and there's an alert for this and an alert for that. And
yeah.
it's just living in fear. And it's not yeah. necessary and it's not serving anybody. And so we need to mm-hmm. turn down the volume of the noise and the alerts and the fear and turn up the peace and quiet. You know, I go into stores mm-hmm. and I say, can you turn down the music? Or I go into restaurants and I say, can you turn down the noise? I'd much rather have a peaceful evening and a nice meal. I don't need the noise. You know, and so
right.
it takes everybody to stand up and say, can we turn down the noise and turn down the alerts and have more peace and quiet? And we have to change as a culture.
Yeah, and it definitely, you know, there's the different things for different areas, but that's when you have people that migrate. I mean, that's why it happened all of those decades ago. People migrated, you know, it just didn't suit them. Pick up your stuff and move, you know. And people are so lodged into, well, I can't leave because of this, because of that. You know, dude, if you got to complain about something and you don't like it, go. If you can't fix it, go, you know, start another culture somewhere else.
You don't need to leave the city or where you are. You can just go to the head waiter in the restaurant and say, can we have it a little bit quieter?
Mm-hmm.
You know, peace and quiet is not that complicated.
Yeah.
You know, you can risk and call the neighbor who has the barking dog. Please, you know, your dog is barking all night and we're getting no sleep. You know, I know it's not easy, but can you put a collar on your dog? You know, it's like people need to stand up and risk and say, I'm going to live with more peace and quiet. And it begins with creating peace and quiet for ourselves. I'm sure in New Orleans there must be beautiful places to go and take a walk or sit on the beach or have peace and quiet. And that a little peace and quiet goes a long ways. And then we speak to each other in a more human way. We're more patient with each other, more giving with each other, more generous.
Right.
We have more compassion. Everything comes when we're nourishing our hearts. Our life begins changing. Because we're not sitting on our nerves and we're not totally frustrated and stressed. It's not that difficult. Everybody can do it. We have to make the steps to do it. I want
to
invite
you. It's not about being reactive either, you know, like always reacting to things.
Ourselves, if we're nourishing ourselves, we're less reactive. When somebody comes by and they honk or they cut us off, well, if I had a peaceful afternoon, I'm not going to honk back. I just say, well, that guy's had a bad day. And so if we're nourishing our nerves, if we're taking care of ourselves, we're less reactive and we're more giving.
Yeah.
I want to say hello to your guests who are listening to us. Invite them to stay in touch with us. You know, we're at silentstay.com. And we love it when people write us or come visit. And all of our books are listed in our website. And it's fun reaching out and meeting all different kinds of people. You know, half the people that come to us, they've never done a retreat. They've never meditated. They've never been in any therapy or anything. They just come. They say, I want peace and quiet. And they're welcome. And in a couple days of peace and quiet and nurturing your hearts, you feel different. You know, you feel your own self again. It's not so complicated. So we invite people to stay in touch with us at silentstay.com.
Can you tell us a little bit more about the Silent Stay? Because, you know, sometimes people say, well, I really want to go to this place so I will, you know, be able to, like you said, you know, have peace and quiet and, like, resonate and meditate and everything. But sometimes these places have such a long laundry list of you're going to do this, you're going to do that, you're going to do that, that you really don't get anything. You don't even get that peace and quiet.
Yeah, exactly. And so we create lots of free time. It's okay to take a nap. You know, when we lived in Italy for 12 years, it was normal every afternoon. All the stores are closed. You have a nice pasta and some wine, and you take a nap. Well, when people come to Silent Stay, they can rest. They can take a walk. They can read. They can journal. We give them a lot of free time because most people, they never have free time. And that's part of taking care of our hearts. At 10 o'clock at night, you can make cookies if you want and just enjoy the cookies. So part of what we do with our retreats at Silent Stay is allowing people to have free time and nurture themselves. We have a morning meditation and an evening meditation, and we offer a meditative movement. But most of the day is just free time of being in beautiful nature and having peace and quiet. And a lot of people are a little anxious, you know, well, what am I going to do all day? Or what am I going to do without my cell phone? What am I going to do if I don't get online? And we tell them it's you have to take the step. And when you take the step, it's not really about not talking. It's about enjoying peace and quiet, receiving peace and quiet. So the silence part is not some macho thing like I didn't talk for 3 days. It's about enjoying peace and quiet and having good food and taking a nap and taking a walk in nature. It's really about coming back to ourselves. And you do it with a small community of people who are all doing the same thing so you don't feel strange. This is normal. I'm taking some days for retreat, for some peace and quiet. And there's lots of places around the country now that are beginning to talk about this. You know, I write for the Huffington Post, and the Huffington Post has a whole thing about unhooking, that everybody needs to unhook a little bit and just feel themselves without all the machines and all the gadgets. And so it's becoming more and more normal for people to take a retreat, unhook, and just really receive peace and quiet, because this helps us feel our own quietness inside. And when we find our own quiet inside, then we begin making new choices. You know, life becomes different. And this is what the Pope is talking about. I mean, a lot of people are talking about similar things of unhooking, disconnecting, and finding more joy in life.
Well, you know, that's really great, Bruce, and it was a pleasure to have you with us, because a lot of people are thinking these things. They're saying, I heard that before. Someone told me about that, or I really don't even know what these words mean. And I think you and I have pretty well described what our thoughts were about joy and peace and, you know, how you can find some just time for yourself and figure out what's more important in your life. And not to wait until, you know, hey, you hit that wall and you're, you know, like when they come to me, you hit that wall and you're like, I'm in chaos mode, fix me. So we really, you know, want people to enjoy their life too, and that's most important also. So it's a pleasure to have you with us today.
You know, I enjoy being with you. It's great to meet you. And you're right. You don't want to wait till you're totally stressed out and overwhelmed.
Yeah.
You want to start taking joy and finding peace and quiet wherever we are in our life. And if you are stressed out and totally overwhelmed, then you really have no choice, but you need to take a retreat and breathe and find some peace and quiet. So no matter where we are in life, it's always good to really ask ourselves, what is nourishing me in my life? What is real food that feeds my nerves, that feeds my heart, and to begin making choices around that.
So vitally important. Bruce, can you give us your website and how to purchase your books?
Yeah, the website is silentstay.com. S-I-L-E-N-T, stay, silentstay.com. All the books can be bought there, or the new book called The Love Letters can be bought on Amazon.com. You just type in Love Letters by Bruce Davis on Amazon.com. And we really invite people to stay in touch with us because we enjoy it.
Well, thank you so much for being with us today. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Jeanette.
Thank you. If you'd like more information about Bruce Davis and his book, The Love Letters, St. Francis and St. Clair of Assisi Meet Pope Francis, the link is on today's show page. Please feel free to just click through there and you'll go right to the show page where you'll be able to purchase the book. As Bruce has said, his retreat where you can learn about silence, learn about yourself. You know, I had this assignment twice. No, maybe three or four times now. Who am I? I had to write a paper on it in college. In the 70s, in the 80s, another one in the late 90s, another one in the 2000s. Every single time, you know, it was a different story. So really, who are you? What is important to you? And it's not really about all those ladder steps you go up, you know. Really, you have to be able to be yourself. So please do check out his retreat. It is silentstay.com. And it was a pleasure having you with us this evening. And until tomorrow, I hope you have a great day. And please do check out the website, My Personal Advocate, the number 2.com, if you'd like for more information about the services that I do provide and also about my personal story there. And you'll see that was the one that we have referenced on this show. So thank you so much for being with us. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and until tomorrow, have a wonderful evening.